Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.
My name is Alan Stanford. Welcome to Hamlet in Hoth. Hamlet has now arrived at his mother's closet, and he is determined to show her the error of her ways. Unfortunately, she is equally determined to show him the error of his.
Hamlet, thou hast thy father much offended.
Mother, you have my father much offended.
Come, come, you answer with an idle tongue.
Go, go, you question with a wicked tongue.
Why, how now, Hamlet?
What's the matter now?
Have you forgot me?
No, by the rood, not so. You are the queen, your husband's brother's wife, and, would it were not so, you are my mother.
Now this early aggression is going to cause another untimely death in a few moments. What you've got is a petulant and angry son having a row with his mother. And possibly of all the scenes in the play and amongst the whole canon of Shakespeare, this is one perfect example of the dysfunctional relationship between the petulant son and the mother, who actually isn't the best of mothers in the world. So they have a row that just goes nowhere. You did this, well, you did that, well, you did this, well, you did that, well, I hate you, well, you're not behaving very well. And that's the kind of row that's going on between them. But in the middle of all this, suddenly Hamlet gets a little bit violent with her, and that is a mistake.
Help, help, ho!
What? Ho! Help, help, help!
How now? A rat? Dead for a ducat. Dead.
And of course Hamlet assumes that hiding behind the curtain in the closet must be Claudius. Who else would be in his mother's bedroom but Claudius? Therefore in a state technically of incest. So immediately Hamlet takes out his sword and stabs through the curtain at what he believes to be the king. Of course it wasn't the king. It was Polonius, who, as usual, is spying on other people. Polonius minding other people's affairs instead of his own, being true to the king and not being true to himself. And for that, he loses his life. Hamlet stabs blindly to send Claudius's soul to hell. Unfortunately, to purgatory, probably, that he sends Polonius.
Oh me, what hast thou done?
Nay, I know not. Is it the king?
Oh, what a rash and bloody deed is this.
A bloody deed. Almost as bad, dear mother, as kill a king and marry with his brother.
As kill a king?
Aye, lady, 'twas my word.
Very interesting there. One can never quite be sure when Gertrude says, as kill a king, whether it is a surprise to her as, what an idea, what are you talking about, or, oh my God, he's found out. Now, it's the only moment in the play where one isn't quite sure whether Gertrude actually knows whether or not Claudius killed old Hamlet. At no other point in the play is such a reference made, and it's one of the great imponderable questions, and it allows scholars, students, and actors alike to interpret whichever way they wish. For my money, she never knew, and that is a line of absolute surprise. Hamlet, realizing his error over who he killed, immediately regrets his action, but he gives Polonius a very appropriate epitaph.
Thou wretched, rash, intruding fool, farewell. I took thee for thy better. Take thy fortune. Thou find'st to be too busy is some danger.
Now, find'st to be too busy is some danger. It's a very good warning to all of us. Don't stick your nose in other people's affairs. You may end up with a sword stuck in yours. Now he turns to his mother to readdress the real reason for his visit.
Leave wringing of your hands. Peace, sit you down. And let me wring your heart, for so I shall, if it be made of penetrable stuff.
Hamlet, actually interesting, refers to her as having an impenetrable heart. You always do get the feeling that there is a coldness between them, that he hasn't lived at home for a long time, he's been a student in Wittenberg, that she is a queen, that she is a little standoffish from him. She speaks to him generally in a very formal way. It's only later in the play that she begins to develop a clear affection for him. He wants his mother to see and understand what, in his eyes, she has done. He wants her to compare her two husbands, but he is the one who paints the picture of them.
Look here, upon this picture, and on this, the counterfeit presentment of two brothers. See, what a grace was seated on this brow. Hyperion's curls, the front of Jove himself, an eye like Mars to threaten and command.
It's very clear that he's referring to his own father in that description.
A combination and a form indeed, where every god did seem to set his seal, to give the world assurance of a man. This was your husband. Look you now what follows. Here is your husband, like a mildewed ear, blasting his wholesome brother. Have you eyes? Could you on this fair mountain leave to feed and batten on this moor?
Like a mildewed ear. What a hideous way to describe another person. Could you on this fair mountain leave to feed and batten on this moor? In other words, how could you leave my glorious and gorgeous dad to go and live with my hideously deformed and ugly uncle? Which, of course, isn't true. There is no reference whatsoever to suggest that Claudius is anything less than a perfectly attractive human being. But Hamlet is presenting good and evil in the conventional sense that good, heroic, therefore is beautiful, and evil and bad is therefore ugly. He's doing something that Shakespeare would never do. Hamlet is painting a very bad theatrical picture in order to demonstrate his point, and he's using physical representation of evil and physical representation of good. Now, Gertrude simply doesn't want to listen to this. She doesn't want to hear it. It's just going too far. It's too much for her to take, especially with the dead body lying on the floor of her boudoir.
Oh, speak to me no more. These words, like daggers, enter in mine ears. No more, sweet Hamlet.
A murderer and a villain. A slave that is not 20th part the tithe of your precedent, lord. A vice of kings. A cut-purse of the empire and the rule. For from a shelf the precious diadem stole and put it in his pocket.
He can't let it go, can he? A murderer and a villain. A slave, not 20th part your precedent, lord. A vice of kings. A cut-purse of the... He really just paints Claudius into the corner as the most monstrous human being that ever lived. Gertrude has only one answer to that.
No more.
A king of shreds and patches.
And at that moment, there is another strange intervention. The ghost appears again. The ghost comes back. Now, we must assume that because the ghost returns from purgatory, it's a very serious thing that can drag him back. And the thing that drags him back, most importantly, is that Hamlet is bullying his mother. And the one thing that we have learned is that old Hamlet, the old king, very much loved Gertrude. And the one injunction he gave to Hamlet was, do not hurt your mother. Get me my revenge, but don't lay a finger on your mother. Get me my revenge, but don't say anything bad about your mother. Do anything you have to do, but don't touch your mother. And what is Hamlet doing at the moment? He's abusing his mother. And that summons the ghost back, who tells him, stop it. Now.
Save me, and hover over me with your wings, you heavenly guards. What would your gracious figure?
Alas, he's mad.
Do you not come your tardy son to chide, that, lapsed in time and passion, lets go by the important acting of your dread command? Oh, say!
Alas, how is it with you that you do bend your eyes on vacancy and with the incorporeal air do hold his curse? To whom do you speak this?
Do you see nothing there?
Nothing at all, yet all that is I see.
Nor did you nothing here?
No, nothing but ourselves.
And that's also important. Shakespeare gives another opportunity for Gertrude to be fairly convinced now that Hamlet is actually out of his mind. If he's seeing things that aren't there, he's talking to the wall. He's behaving in a most peculiar way. He seems to be having visions. Now, anybody with the most generous of imagination would probably think, looking at this guy, he has lost it. He is definitely out of his mind. And the one thing that definitely can't be there is his dead father.
What shall I do?
Not this, by no means, that I bid you do. Let the bloke king tempt you again to bed, pinch wanton on your cheek, call you his mouse, and let him, for a pair of reachy kisses, or paddling in your neck with his damned fingers, make you to ravel all this matter out, that I, essentially, am not in madness, but mad in craft.
So Hamlet sort of gives it all away to his mother. He says, and again, with that beautiful reversal of Shakespeare, not this by no means that I bid you do. So he says all the things that she might do, and they're the things that she must not do. Let the bloat king, here we go again, the bloat king, tempt you again to bed, pinch wanton in your cheeks, call you his mouse, and let him for a pair of reachy kisses or paddling in your... In other words, he paints this picture of a hideously horrible, middle-aged, fat man getting into bed with her and saying, do what I tell you to do, sweetie, do what I tell you to do. He's saying, don't let it happen. Don't talk to him, don't discuss it with him, don't let him into your bed, and don't let him get from you that I'm not actually mad, I'm only pretending to be. If anything is going to convince her that he's mad, that is. And of course, at the very first opportunity, Gertrude tells Claudius everything. and confirms Hamlet's madness. And thank you to Glenn Stevenson, to Christiane Smith, and to Carl Conyard for reading those extracts.
Look here upon this picture. And on this, the counterfeit presentment of two brothers. See what a grace was seated on this brow. Hyperion's curls, the front of Jove himself. An eye like Mars to threaten and command, a station like the herald Mercury, new lighted on a heaven-kissing hill, a combination and a form indeed where every god did seem to set his seal to give the world assurance of a man. This was your husband. Look you now what follows. This is your husband, like a mildewed ear blasting his wholesome brother. Have you eyes? Could you on this fair mountain leave to feed and batten on this moor? Nah, have you eyes? You cannot call it love, for at your age the heyday in the blood is tame. It's humble and waits upon the judgment. And what judgment would step from this to this? Sense sure you have, else could you not have motion? But sure that sense is apoplexed, for madness would or not earn, or sense to ecstasy was ne'er so thralled, but it reserves some quantity of choice to serve in such a difference. What devil wast that thus hath cozened you at hoodman blind, eyes without feeling, feeling without sight, ears without eyes or hands, smelling sans all, or but a sickly part of one true sense could not so mope? Oh, shame, where is thy blush? Rebellious hell, if thou canst mutin in a matron's bones to flaming youth, let virtue be as wax and melt in her own fire. Proclaim no shame when the compulsive ardor gives the charge, since frost itself as actively doth burn and reason panders will.
Oh, Hamlet, speak no more. Thou dost turn mine eyes into my very soul, and then I see such black and grained spots as will not leave that tick.
Nay, but to live in the rank sweat of an ensemen bed, stewed in corruption, honeying and making love over the nasty sty.
Oh, speak to me no more. These words like daggers enter in my ears no more, sweet Hamlet.
A murderer and a villain. A slave that is not 20th part the tithe of your preceding lord. A vice of kings. A cut purse of the empire and the rule that from a shelf the precious diadem stole and put it in his pocket.
No more.
A king of shreds and patches.
Drama on One.
Sundays at 8 p.m.
rte.ie/drama on one.
Drama on One.